is Jerusalem the cup of trembling in the hand of the world? It is because it is spiritual. Satan has declared war on everything God has to say, and God has had quite a bit to say about the survival and restoration of Israel. And in his madness, Satan is determined to destroy it, to prove God wrong. He is insane. He is the father of those who are insane. And the world stampedes behind him, insisting that he doesn't exist, by the way, as they follow him to their destruction.
This is Cross Reference Radio with our pastor and teacher, Rick Gaston. Rick is the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel, Mechanicsville. Please join us as we study the book of Luke verse by verse. And after today's message, I'll share more information about Cross Reference Radio, specifically how you can get a free copy of this teaching. Now, let's join Pastor Rick for today's study.
Good morning. Welcome to the house of the Lord. Those listening online, good morning to you also. Let's open our Bibles to the Gospel according to Luke, chapter 21. We will take verses 20 through 28, hopefully, beginning at verse 20. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the midst of her depart, and let not those who are in the country enter her. For these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe to those who are pregnant, and to those who are nursing babies in those days, for there will be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. And there will be signs in the sun, in the moon, and in the stars, and on the earth distress of the nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and the expectation of those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Now when these things begin to happen, look up, lift up your heads, because your redemption draws near. Well, this is a vast subject, and I'll have to try to slow down and get it all in. Anytime we talk about prophecy, there's so much information to put together, and there are so many verses necessary to back up everything that we say, so we are not guilty of speculating or going off the deep end. And so we look back again at verse 20. What we're considering is Jerusalem's final fall and the return of Jesus Christ. And we say the final fall of Jerusalem because there have been many, and we'll cover some of it as we move through. I'll try not to flood you with information, but information hopefully you will get. He says in verse 20, but when you see. Now he is speaking beyond his immediate audience. We know that because they did not live to see these things, not all of them, that he was prophesying about. And his audience, of course, is expanded through the ages. It includes us and all the saints who have been since the days of Christ. And so this prophecy, as so often is the case in Scripture, has a near fulfillment and a far fulfillment. There's an immediate or a very close partial fulfillment of the prophecy, and then there is the absolute fulfillment of the prophecy. And to get to it, I'll repeat it several times this morning very likely. Jerusalem fell to the Romans in 70 AD, 37 years thereabout, after the time that Jesus spoke these words. The temple that Jesus saw was destroyed. But there's a third temple going to be built in Jerusalem, and that temple is going to be assaulted by Antichrist. And so we'll cover it as we go through, but bear in mind, as you read this section of Luke, there are pockets that have a near fulfillment, but overall, it will be fulfilled in the end. He says, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies. Why is Jerusalem surrounded by armies? Because she is hated by armies. And there's a reason why there are armies of people through history that have hated the Jews. Now, Jerusalem's not hated when the Jews don't have possession. It's when they have possession. That is when the world rallies against her. Armies of lost souls who think that it's permissible to hate Israel, that think that it's permissible to hate the Jew. There have been many who've claimed to be Christians who have fallen to this ploy of Satan, and it is satanic. Most certainly it is. But in the finale, Jerusalem will be surrounded so that Antichrist's agenda can have life, because Antichrist will look to make Jerusalem the center of his perverted worship, his demonic worship, as he will make Rome the center of his political power and Babylon his economic power. And so all of these things, again, laid out for us in Scripture. The righteous should not be here to see Antichrist come into authority in this world. If you believe in the rapture, I most certainly do, then you know that you will be taken away before these things can occur. We'll quote that verse. I believe I have it somewhere here this morning from Thessalonians. But no matter how many times Jerusalem is surrounded, the Jews themselves cannot seem to realize that it is because they have rejected their own scripture. Therefore, they could not identify their own Messiah. And therefore, they could not be in fellowship with the God whom they claim to be in fellowship with. And so these wounds that the Jews have suffered through the ages have been self-inflicted. It is all spiritual. Everything in life of any value is spiritual. It is a spiritual issue, and this is why Satan targets it. And so as we look at the historians who go back and try to compile a list of events for us so we can wrap our heads around what's happening, what God is allowing to happen, and his causes and purposes in the midst of them, we consider that there have been 118 listed separate conflicts for Jerusalem during the past 3,400 years. 118, just for this little patch of land and this little footprint of territory within that patch of land. Why not just march around it and go somewhere else? Aren't there bigger fish to fry? Why is Jerusalem the cup of trembling in the hand of the world? It is because it is spiritual. Satan has declared war on everything God has to say. And God has had quite a bit to say about the survival and restoration of Israel. And in his madness, Satan is determined to destroy it, to prove God wrong. He is insane. He is the father of those who are insane. And the world stampedes behind him, insisting that he doesn't exist, by the way, as they follow him to their destruction. Conflicts from local religious struggles to strategic military campaigns have been throughout their history. Jerusalem has been completely destroyed at least twice, besieged over 23 times, attacked an additional 52 times, captured and recaptured 44 times. It has been the scene of 20 revolts and innumerable riots. We read of many of them just in the book of Acts. It has only changed hands peacefully, completely changed hands peacefully, twice in 3,400 years. And so this passage, it is coming from the Son of God. This is God's Son speaking these things. So the authority behind it is insurmountable, is unsurpassed. It's nothing that matches the thrust of these words and what is happening. Now, this parallels in a past event that Daniel spoke of. Daniel spoke of a past event that would happen to Jerusalem, and he spoke beyond to the last of the days, to the end of human history. Christ is incorporating what Daniel has said, and I'll bring it out in a minute. But in 167 B.C., 167 B.C., years before Christ, I don't know how many minutes, don't ask, Antiochus Epiphanes, that madman from Syria, erected an altar to Zeus in the temple. He was an absolute kook. He was a type, or is a type in scripture typology, of the Antichrist to come, the son of sin, the Assyrian, the man of perdition, the vile one, the big mouth. All of these names the Bible has for this beast of a person. And Antiochus Epiphanes was just that. Their violence and their hatred, and unnecessarily so, toward the Jew. It is not as though the Jews have attacked them. No, they have attacked the Jews. Then there is, of course, in 70 AD, almost 100 years later, the Roman army that will destroy the temple. So let's track the temple. We have the tabernacle in the wilderness of Moses that the Jews, it was portable, they carried it around with them in the wilderness. Now, it was nothing but a tent until the presence of God shows up. Now, all of a sudden, the dwelling place of the presence of God on earth, the Shekinah. It is true to this day. This building is absolutely nothing until the saints show up to worship in the presence of the Lord and commune with him. Now it becomes the house of God. Well, after the temple made its way across Jordan, it took a long time before finally Solomon was entrusted by the Lord with the responsibility of building the temple of God in Jerusalem. Well, in time, the apostate kings brought down the wrath of God on it, the apostate people enabling them. That temple was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, issuing in the time of the Gentiles, which we are still living in. Now, there's a difference between the time of the Gentiles and the fullness of the Gentiles. The fullness of the Gentiles that Paul writes about in Romans has to do with the last Gentile getting converted to Christianity. When that last Gentile is converted, the rapture comes. Are you here this morning? Is there the last Gentile to be converted so we can get out of here? Well, we've got too much work to do to be pressing too much on when we're going to get out of here. We have much preaching still left in us. Well, that's the fullness of the Gentiles. But the times of the Gentiles, is their authority over Jerusalem and their influence in the world and their threat to Jerusalem, and we live in this time presently. The second temple, after Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Solomon's temple, of course, over 70 years later, they end up with a second temple by Zerubbabel. Herod would embellish and expand this temple. It was under construction, and Herod renovations and improvements were going on in the life of Christ. They would be going on until 64 years after his birth. The temple was destroyed in 70 AD. In 64, they believe it was finally finished. So when the disciples left the temple after his temple teachings, he's on his way to the cross. That's what's going all around all of this. They said, look at this beautiful temple. The gold alone should have made Jesus go, oh, wow. And he says, not a stone will be left of this thing. It'll be rubble. It's going away. And that caused this Olivet Discourse. When they reached the Mount of Olives just across the Kidron Valley, you look over, you see the Temple Mount. They reach that and they say, tell us more. When will it be? What is the sign of your coming? You know, they associated his return with the destruction of the temple. And he starts this lesson that we are in the midst of. That temple of Herod was, as I've mentioned several times already, destroyed by the Romans. We'll cover some of the details of that. There's no temple right now, but there is a group of Jews called the Temple Mount Faithful, and they are committed to having their temple rebuilt. They have already taken under their task the instruments for the animal sacrifices, the priestly garments. They're looking for the red heifer, and they will DNA search for the Aaronic line. They are very serious about this, and that temple will be built, and we know because Jesus said it will be violated by the vile person, the Antichrist. And so that is future. Well, that's what prophecy is. We are moving in spiritual information, information that can only come from God. And he has put it here for us. You say, prophecy is too difficult for me. No, it's not. Don't believe that for one second. Paul gave prophecy to the Thessalonians soon after he arrived, him and Silas, with the wounds on their back still fresh from Philippi. And he taught them about the Christ, and he taught them about the end times. For those of you who must hear it, eschatology. I don't think we need those words, really. I think end times is easier to spell, and I prefer it. He says here, then know that its destruction is near. Let's take it in context from verse 20. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Again, there have been three of them. One before this, three major ones after the writing prophets, Malachi being the last. There was Antiochus Epiphany. There's one to come after he spoke these words with the Romans. And then there's the one that has not yet happened because the temple is not there, but it will happen. And so he says, when you see Jerusalem surrounded, these things are going to take place. Well, they saw that, a partial fulfillment. Imagine being soldiers on the wall in Jerusalem in the towers, and you look out and you see these legions upon legions of deployed Roman troops. The infantry, the cavalry, the catapults, all of the activity back and forth as the numbers begin to grow and grow and grow. The convoy lines, the fires at night, the campfires. Imagine the fright in the heart of the people as they were watching their destruction come. And by the time the legion showed up, it was too late for negotiations. Their end would be horrific. And when Antichrist defiles the temple, it will happen midway through the Great Tribulation period, the time known as Jacob's trouble. So what I'm now trying to introduce is the next phase. We are in the times of the Gentiles. The temple will be rebuilt in Jerusalem. We likely will not be here to see that start. Antichrist will likely be a very big part of the Jews getting that temple rebuilt. The Great Tribulation period, as it is known in Scripture, lasts for 7 years. The first 3.5 years will be relatively peaceful, though there will be events taking place on earth that will cause these earthlings to have an eerie feeling about things. But then at the halfway point, at the 3.5 year period, Antichrist is going to wig out, and his true demonic colors will surface. And that's when he will go to the temple in Jerusalem and declare himself as God and to be worshipped there and defile the temple. And so the fall of Jerusalem in Jesus' day was soon after the fall of Jerusalem. The next one is still to come. Now, here's the prophecies, the scripture verses to back these things up. I'm trying to speak slowly. That's the problem when there's so much information. Daniel 11. And forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place there the abomination of desolation. Well, Antiochus Epiphanes did this. And Daniel is including that defilement in this prophecy, but he is going far beyond. He's passing even the Roman destruction of the temple. Jesus said this about what Daniel said in Mark 13. So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing where it ought not be, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Okay, so you can say, well, how do we know he's not speaking about only the Roman desecration of the temple? Because Daniel gives us another clue. Now, of course, this abomination refers to something vile and disgusting, detestable, abhorrent, intolerable to God. Daniel then writes again about this moment. He says, and from that time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, that is Antichrist claiming to be God in the soon-to-be Jewish temple, rebuilt Jewish temple, this is what Daniel says. There shall be 1,290 days. 3.5 years before Christ comes back to deal with this. Jesus will say there will be tribulation on earth such as the world has never known. See, that didn't happen with the Romans. There was tribulation in Jerusalem, but not such as the world has never known. And so these things remain to be fulfilled. And so the Lord has been phasing in his prophecy to say to you, listen, I was right about those and I'm right about these. You either believe it by faith or you reject it by faithlessness. The choice is up to you. And the consequences, though, they're up to me. And I'm listing the consequences. And as all the blessings of the Bible will be fulfilled, so will all the curses to those who line up against me. This is the lesson of Scripture. We have to be very careful. As we are in the age of grace and faith, we must also present the fear and awesomeness of the Lord. And to leave that part out is to edit his word. We must include those things that shake the soul, ours included. And so Antichrist in Jerusalem for 3.5 years, Jeremiah says this about this time. He says, alas, for that day is great, so that there is none like it, and it is the time of Jacob's trouble, and he shall be saved out of it. And there's so much, again, more information. This is what Paul says about this final blasphemy on the third temple of the Jews. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. Now that is the apostasy, where the known church on earth, the present church on earth, will collectively fall away from the gospel. Oh, they will continue to call themselves a church, but they won't be. They will be apostates. And so Paul is saying before the rapture comes, this apostasy is going to take place. He says, and the man of sin is revealed. That is Antichrist, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshiped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So Paul, writing after Jesus' words, is saying, see, the temple's going to be rebuilt. Now, at the time Paul spoke this, the temple was still there. These events have not taken place. When the Romans sacked that temple, they didn't come in and say, okay, we're God. They were looking for the gold. That's what they were after when they destroyed it. In fact, Titus tried not to have his troops destroy the temple, but it got out of hand. And so Paul says that that Antichrist is going to come in and he's going to claim his deity, and we find this throughout the Revelation, especially in Revelation 13, where it speaks about the false Christ, Antichrist, and his false prophet. And so this remains to be fulfilled, and we should be preaching it. There is salvation for the lost in these things. God calling the history before it becomes history. And then it enters into our textbooks. We have so much of it all already done. You can go on Wikipedia, for example. And remember, it's liberal-based, so be careful. Verse 21, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the midst of her depart, and let not those who are in the country enter her. Now, Judea is that territory west of the Dead Sea. But this is inclusive to Israel. The armies, the main armies of the Antichrist, will come from the north, but they'll also surround it. They'll be coming from, they have planes, they've got everything to come from every direction. But Jesus is sending this warning, and what he is saying is this is going to be a difficult time, and there are going to be saints alive. Tribulation saints and 144,000 Jews will be dispatched during this time. There will be conversions. There will be tremendous amount of martyrdoms, a lot of activity going on. And we are told by the prophet Zechariah that 2/3 of those in Israel will not survive. That right now, Israel's population is 8.25 million. That number will likely spike up higher as the Lord continues to repopulate the land or repatriate the land with Jews. So 2/3 of 8.25 million, over 5.5 million people slaughtered in this little footprint. How many stadiums would that fill up in this 3.5 year period? Zechariah 13:8-9, and it shall come to pass in all the land, says Yahweh, that 2/3 in it shall be cut off and die, but 1/3 shall be left in it, and I will bring 1/3 through the fire, will refine them as silver is refined, and test them as gold is tested. They will call on my name, and I will answer them. I will say, this is my people, and each one will say, Yahweh is my God.
You've been listening to Cross Reference Radio, the daily radio ministry of Pastor Rick Gaston of Calvary Chapel in Mechanicsville, Virginia. As we mentioned at the beginning of today's broadcast, today's teaching is available free of charge at our website. Simply log on to www.crossreferenceradio.com. That's crossreferenceradio.com. We'd also like to encourage you to subscribe to the Cross Reference Radio podcast. Subscribing ensures that you stay current with all the latest teachings from Pastor Rick. You can subscribe at crossreferenceradio.com or simply search for Cross Reference Radio in iTunes. Join us next time as Pastor Rick continues teaching through the Gospel of Luke, right here on Cross Reference Radio.